You're listening to David Kaplan, weekdays 9 to noon on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN app.
Welcome back, 12 o'clock, beautiful city of Chicago with Danny and Chris. I'm David Kaplan. Thank you, Danny Zetterman. Thank you, Chris Black. And thank you to our guests today, Jimbo Covert, the Hall of Famer, Mike Ditka, Hall of Famer, Jesse Rogers, Tommy Waddle, 85 Bear, and we are hard-hitting, we are suspense, we are the Wolves. It's rivalry week at Allstate Arena. The Chicago Wolves take on the Milwaukee Admirals this Saturday and the Rockford IceHogs this Sunday. Come check out the Wolves in person against their rivals. Go to chicagowolves.com for tickets. And we welcome the beautifully talented team of Carmen and Yurko.
We're here. We like to refer to ourselves as handsome, if you don't mind.
Yes, we're very handsome. Very handsome men.
Yes. Very handsome.
Flowers are beautiful. Men are handsome.
John, I said to Waddle, you would have been perfect in the Platteville days.
Well, I've been to Platteville. It was fun. It was nice going
I'm
up to the Hoist
about
House.
If you were playing.
Have a good time. Yeah, it didn't happen for me, unfortunately. Fortunately, I did not get the chance to play for my hometown team.
Tell everybody where you trained each and every year for the different teams you played on.
I played with Miami. We trained at our headquarters. When I played for Green Bay, we trained at the headquarters. When I was and did training camp for both of them at headquarters. When I was in Jacksonville, it was the headquarters, right by Altel Stadium. When I was in Cleveland, it was Bray, Ohio, the headquarters.
It's interesting.
All training camps, all done at the headquarters. What the Bears were doing was actually antiquated.
A little bit.
Yeah.
22 of the 32 teams now are back in their training
camp. And there's really no training camp anymore. I mean, how many
training camps? A joke.
Bourbonnais was
great
all these years.
Right. They had two practices a day each day.
They were great hosts. It was a lot of fun. We have fond memories. And Bourbonnais is the beneficiary of some great years having the Bears down there. They built those beautiful facilities.
Oh my heavens.
On the money that they made from the Chicago Bears. But it's time for it to probably be done. No big deal. No, you don't. There's nothing happens down there anymore.
Nobody's being cheated of anything
Not anymore.
One practice a day tops.
If you would have said this in 2005, you would have been like, whoa.
Listen, when they had two practices, there was a reason to go down.
Right.
Saw practice. You went and got lunch. You went and visited some of the local haunts. Maybe saw the Kankakee River, whether it was flood stage or whether it was barren.
Maybe you played Bon Vivant.
Kankakee
River.
Kankakee Elks Golf Club down there. Maybe you did something interesting like that.
Went to TJ's or the library.
Now you had one practice at 8:45 in the morning by 10 o'clock. Now you got the rest of your day to spend in Kankakee and Bradley.
That's so much fun.
Good luck.
So that town built up around the Bears over the years. I mean, it really did grow a little and expand, and they,
it was a benefit to Bradley Bourbonnais over the course of 18 years.
But now it's time for, with the new facilities they just built. I mean, all the money they invested, Cap and Waddle were just talking about this, all the money they invested to improve their own facilities, it's time. You don't even really have a training camp anymore anyway.
$100 million, and they say the Bears facility today,
a lot of money
change, is the best in the NFL.
So why not have it then,
when's
right?
the lease up at Soldier Field?
Don't know the answer to that.
Well, let me look that up.
When's
for
the
you.
Lease up at Soldier Field? That's the next thing. Do you mind not seeing your Bears at Soldier Field?
I don't mind one bit. It makes no sense that they don't own the stadium.
What if Churchill Downs turns into the next Bears stadium?
You mean Arlington Park?
Arlington Park, yes.
Which Churchill is owned Downs. By Churchill Downs. Right. And Churchill Downs desperately wants to sell it.
Yeah. They want out of the horse racing business up here.
Fine.
They have misled the horse owners and all the people associated with horse racing in the city or the state of Illinois. They've misled them, saying that if we got gambling, we'd be more than happy to go ahead and put it into the purses. They misled them the whole time. It was deceptive. They were deceiving them. What they want to do is sell that thing to either some real estate company or to the Bears and build a stadium there.
Yeah, I don't mind if they move. I'm the wrong guy to ask. I don't go to Soldier Field for games. I'd rather watch at home. I see Bears games on the road when we take a trip with the guys and we go see a different city, a different stadium. I've seen three times as many road Bears games in the last 15 years as I've seen home games. I don't think I've been to a home Bears game at Soldier Field since the 2006 season.
I've seen
them a bunch of times on the road.
Last year I watched the game.
I got no interest.
Bears
I'd rather be at home.
Three years with options for eight more. Is that what you're saying?
No, according to a story that Brad Biggs wrote in the Tribune, the current lease runs through 2033.
Well, that's way too long.
Yeah,
they can break that. They should have their
same
own
way
stadium.
The Chicago Fire broke their lease in Bridgeview. They could break any lease. There's a buyout. There's an X amount of dollars.
What are the Bears worth? About $2
billion? No. Bears are north of $3
billion. Okay, $3 billion? They don't own their stadium.
Yep. That's true. No gray area. They don't own their stadium.
Think about what they'd be worth if they owned their stadium and they controlled that revenue.
Yes. Another article that I'm reading in the Sun-Times says that the Chicago Bears would have, there are some outs.
Of course there are.
There you go.
You can get out of anything.
There you go. So they're out. So that's your next thing.
Money talks, like Yurko said. How did the Fire move back to Soldier Field this
money
summer?
Money talks.
They
gave Bridgeview $20 million.
More than that.
Joe Mansueto, the billionaire who owns the Fire now, said, guys, thanks, but I want to play at Soldier Field.
You know what? The Fire's paying the Village $60.5 million over the next 17 years.
To Joe Mansueto, that's nothing. Hey, here's a nice big fat check for you. There you go. Of course the Bears
Listen, they can have all the concerts in the world they want out there.
Yeah.
I saw Kenny Chesney out there. You can have a bunch of different venues here. You know, during the summer, that's an open concept out there. You can have concerts there, concerts here. You can have concerts everywhere.
It's crazy.
Wrigley runs concerts because they want money. They want cash.
It's crazy that the Bears don't own their own.
When
you've got
a greater metropolitan area of 9 million people, you can have multiple concerts in town at one time and it not being an issue.
Multiple venues in such a big city, such a prominent franchise like the Bears, that they don't own their stadium. Is ridiculous.
That's probably going to change.
I would think
because they're all money making. You know what they're going to build then? Then you're building the mall,
of course,
within your stadium, so it's producing revenue 365 days a year.
If you put a roof on it, what happens?
You're putting a roof on it.
You get a
tournament,
Super Bowl, a tournament,
Super Bowl four.
You get a tournament.
That's what I meant. Yeah. Well, sure. You get a Super Bowl.
Yes.
You don't think that if the Bears went to Roger Goodell in the NFL and said, okay, we're going to build our own finally. We're going to put a roof on it. We get the Super Bowl in 2030. Done.
March Madness, the Final Four. They can host the Masters inside there.
So, yeah, eventually they just put 100 schmil in their facility at Lake Forest.
Used to it.
Now come up with $2 billion, which is not hard for them.
And guess what you get?
Don't ask us to pay for it. Get your own money.
You want to bet? Watch this. You know what else you're going to have to do with that new stadium? How about fresh PSLs?
Whoa,
yeah, you paid them here.
The you know what?
They're not going to carry over.
I don't think it would carry over.
No. Fresh PSLs. Yeah,
they'll find people to take those. Don't worry.
If they don't, they'll have to lower the price. That's the way it works.
People would pay it,
but don't come hat in hand.
Some would not, though. Some would. Some would not.
Come up with the money. Yeah, they'll hit us for some of it. You know they will.
Infrastructure.
Coming. Yeah, they'll hit us for a little bit.
Well, it would be Arlington Heights then. Isn't that where it's at? Arlington Heights would then have
that would be that location.
Go to the state, yes. Yeah. Well, that's the only location that's big enough to
go ahead and do that. Where the track is.
Where the track is, yeah.
You got the train that runs out there.
Oh, it's perfect. Can you imagine?
Yep.
For the people that did live in the city?
So that's the next step, guys. You know, if you look at your 10-year plan Chicago Bears, you think they just decided one morning they woke up over the holidays and said, nah, let's get the hell out of Bourbonnais. No.
Yeah.
This is something they knew about for an extended period of time. Then they popped it on you, man.
Yeah.
Do you see how Atlanta's changing their jerseys next year?
It's like 2020 and they still don't own theirs.
Atlanta, the Falcons?
The Falcons are changing their jerseys next year. You know,
they are?
Yeah, they're going with a different design, you know.
You know why, don't you? Time to make more money.
That's right.
Sell new jerseys.
But they probably
got to get the new Matt Ryan jersey.
So I think it was Mike Florio or somebody at ProFootballTalk.com said that, boy, if you bought a jersey this year for the Atlanta Falcons, it was the old jersey, they deserve a discount. Deserve a what?
I don't think so, Mike.
Deserve a what? Sorry. A discount?
Yeah.
No, they're buying a jersey. They can buy another jersey if they want to wear the other jersey.
Right.
How many times you go to the game and you see McCown jersey still being worn? You see a Curtis Enos jersey still being
every
worn.
Every once in a while, you'll see a Curtis Enos.
You'll see old school jerseys the same way you see Tommy Waddle.
Yeah.
You'll see all the Walter Paytons and the Dick Butkuses being worn.
Yeah.
Come on.
So I was at Apt Electronics the other day.
Yes.
I saw this picture.
Right there.
Hampton. Somebody's wearing a Dan Hampton jersey.
Dan Hampton jersey at Apt Electronics. So I texted to Hamp and said, looking good, Hamp O'Bear. I like your new hairstyle.
It's not bad. A baldy locks there, huh?
Yep. So pretty funny. But yeah, those jerseys are around all the time.
Yeah, now you got to buy your new Julio Jones jersey.
That's it.
That's the way it goes, man.
That's it. Bears 25-1, tied for 10th choice to win the Super Bowl next year.
Good luck. That's dead money.
25-1.
If Mitch Trubisky.
Those are the Bears fans.
Mitch Trubisky is your quarterback.
Yurko and I rode the elevator in the parking garage with a guy wearing a Bears hat. So, of course, Yurko starts chatting
him up. I start just talking him up.
I mean, like it was like right out of Central Casting. Yeah. You know what the guy says? Guy says, I don't know, guys, next year about this Trubisky kid. I think maybe he's good, but I don't know. And I'm like, that's the quintessential Bears fan right there. Right. Still there. Can't say his name right. Not sure Trubisky. If he's the answer or not.
So I asked the guy if he saw Colbert made the Hall of Fame. Trubisky. He goes, yeah, I saw Colbert made the Hall of Fame. Boom, boom. He said, what do you think about the Bears next year? He goes, boy, I don't trust that Trubisky.
That Trubisky, I'm not so sure.
That's classic. I'm just like, we turned a corner and we just started laughing.
He's been here 3 years. He's still got guys calling him Trubisky.
Yep. That's
great.
It's beautiful. Well, listen, you don't deserve to have your name pronounced correctly if you don't play well.
I guess you're right.
So I don't mind. Remember the old Budweiser commercial that they had the scene from training camp? Where the kid had his name up on his helmet, and they called him Croder.
Really.
Oh, it's a great commercial. Budweiser, Bud Light, and they couldn't pronounce his name. Then one guy goes, hey, nice job, Croder, because he actually did something well.
Yeah, I had the coach.
We heard.
Did you hear
that? How was the coach?
Coach was actually very good.
Was he okay?
Today.
Was he sharp as a tack?
Danny still in there? Ask
still,
Danny.
Coach still got the fastball this morning?
Wasn't the coach really good today?
Today was probably the last 10 times I've heard Coach on the radio, this was the best.
That's good. He's feeling better.
He's very lucid.
He's in Florida. That's why he's happy. It's warm. Sunny out. Chance for him to go play golf. He's probably playing some contract bridge with Dan Reeves. All types of good stuff going on.
Yeah, he was really good. And so we asked him his thoughts on Mitchell Trubisky. And he said, not only can you win with that kid, you can win championships with that kid.
Then when I thanked him off the air, he said, hey, Danny, what team's Trubisky play for? No, that didn't happen.
Funny,
no.
Danny.
No, we used to love talking to Coach Ditka. Coach, what do you think about what do you think about this guy in the running game? Ah, guys, you know, all I did was hand it to Walter. Thanks for the inside knowledge, Coach.
Appreciate it.
Oh, boy.
Pretty funny.
Ask about Matt Forte. Man, who? What? I just handed the ball to Walter, guys.
The coach would go, guys, I don't watch the games anymore.
It's crazy. 16 weeks in a row.
He's like, I've had enough.
I handed the ball to Walter.
I've had enough. It comes a point where you just can't watch anymore. You know?
Thanks, Coach.
Yeah, you know what? I can't wait to get down to Florida where
coach
it's nice and warm.
Coach is falling asleep on the set, for heaven's sake. Passing gas and falling asleep.
Oh, God. I hope he's right. I hope they win multiple championships with Mitch Trubisky. That'll be the day.
The coach. The mustache. Does Nagy have a mustache?
No.
He's got a beard.
He's got
the goatee.
Something like that.
Yeah, he's got
a goatee. Salt and peppery.
Got a goatee.
No, he's got a full beard.
He just kind of clips it down and then lets it grow a little and clips it down. What are all the young kids are doing these days?
Thank you.
Myself included.
Appreciate that.
You can't shave.
I can shave. What do you mean?
You told me you'd never shave because you don't worry about cutting your chin again.
No, that was like, that happened four years ago.
Wait a minute.
Bleed out like a stuck pig.
When you came in here, that was like four years ago.
Yeah.
Wow, I can't believe
that. No, I've shaved since then. I'm lazy. I don't often. I usually we're not required to for our job, so they don't say you have to be clean shaven, so I usually just...
What does Karen say?
She doesn't. She likes it like this. She likes a little scruff. So, like, once a week, I just take my beard trimmer and clip it down, but I'll shave every once. For my birthday, I went and got a straight razor shave at the Jen's place. You know, I like doing that every once in a while.
Yeah, that's
Jen's
right.
Place.
That's
it's like a salon for men, you know.
Where is this?
Yeah, for men.
There's one up by you in Highland Park, and then there's one down...
down the street.
It's like Jackson and Clark. Yeah, you go in, you could shoot pool, they got a full bar.
Billiards.
You could drink whiskey, they got beers,
Space
TVs.
Invaders,
you could get a little trim, a straight razor shave.
You're going to go in there, you want the straight razor.
You want a barber shave.
You want to take care of my head.
Sure.
Like a gentleman.
Absolutely.
Sure, they can absolutely do that.
You feel like a big shot. They put you in the chair at the gents' place. Yeah.
I got to tell you a little story about earlier today. We was up in our office, right? And I called one of my buddies that I knew had Marino's number because we want to get Danny Marino on to talk about
Jimbo.
Jimbo Covert. And he also knows Jimbo a little bit, and he was going to text Jimbo. He didn't realize Jimbo had already been, put in the, or he was going to go into the Hall of Fame, you know, next August, but they had announced his, what's that called?
The Centennial Class.
Yeah, they announced today. The Centennial Class. Jimbo's we're sitting there, we're talking, and he knows my family. I know his family. I go, yeah. I said, my ex-roommate's doing good. You know, she's everything, boom, boom, boom. Everything's good. The kid's great. Everybody's great. And he goes, yeah. He goes, I almost ran into my ex-wife, too. He goes, but I could have sworn the light was green.
Funny guy.
I started rolling. Carm's over there. He's laughing.
You're like, go ahead and on speakerphone. Yeah. I started laughing.
He started crying.
Funny guy.
Yeah. I ran into my ex-wife, too, but I could have sworn the light was green. I'm like, oh, this is great. He's beautiful. Beautiful.
Yeah, wow. So we were hoping. Yeah. We don't have an updated number on Marino.
Yeah, we're trying to get Marino on today so he could tell us a little bit about Jimbo Covert.
Jericho famously threw up on his rug. So, you know, we've had Danny on before.
Which was confirmed by Danny.
Confirmed by Dan Marino.
Also confirmed that the garbage can was to my left and I wheeled violently to my right.
Well, in a drunken stupor sometimes.
December 14th, 1990.
Mm-hmm.
It's the altitude change from the bar to the 2 feet that I stood up. That's what did it.
The altitude
change. I had altitude sickness.
Hey, that's altitude, baby.
That's right. 2 feet.
Those 2 feet
could throw anybody asunder.
Anybody.
And it did to me that day.
It could happen to the best of them, kid.
And I'm telling you, if you eat escargot and lamb chops.
That was like dangerously close.
Escargot.
I mean, I'm just saying.
Escargot.
It was really dangerous.
What's wrong with you?
It
lamb chops?
Dangerously close.
With mint jelly, I guarantee you the vomit that comes out six hours later will be jet black.
I couldn't imagine, vomiting up escargot.
Jet black.
Yeah. Escargot is actually really good.
Yeah. It's exceptional.
Yeah. You don't even taste the snail. All you taste is the butter and the garlic.
Oh, it's delicious.
Yeah, it's delicious.
And a little meaty substance that just slides down.
Yeah, just kind of
perfectly.
Yeah, it's delicious.
Perfect. What? Escargot.
Escargot.
I stopped at S.
Yeah, that was.
It didn't sound like S.
That was really close to being, you know.
Yeah. Did it sound like ascot?
A little bit.
Did it sound like that?
I like escargot.
Yeah, it's delicious.
Who does Chicago Cut does a lobster escargot.
Oh, it's awesome.
Amazing.
It's so rich, though, man. It's like, it goes
it's instant
right
gout.
To the stomach. I know. It's like,
through the bloodstream and into gout.
Luxuriously rich and delicious. But you can't have too much of it. It'll mess your, or at least it messes my stomach up. I don't have the stomach for it anymore. I just have to have a little tiny piece. I can't resist because it's so good. It's so rich and delicious. Oh, I love it.
What did you think about the firing of Alex Cora? And now there's
the parting of the ways.
Yeah,
I think they had to. They had no choice.
And now there is speculation about Carlos Beltran, and the Mets say they have no comment yet.
I mean, I heard Teixeira go off on it.
He'd be the only player that would be fired then.
Well,
yeah,
you're right. He was a player.
He would be the only player punished in this situation.
I think I would tip my cap to the Mets if they said they just want to start fresh. They don't like what this is. They don't want a cloud hanging over them.
Well, I would then say, no problem, just pay off my contract, and I'd certainly appreciate it. Thank you very kindly.
Yeah. Well, they probably have to, right?
Yeah, of course they would.
Yeah.
Of course they would. If they're willing to part the ways, it's okay. Just part ways with a big check, fellas.
Yeah.
And then he's ready to work for anybody else after that. Why wouldn't he be?
Well, I'm sure.
Major League Baseball said the players weren't responsible in this situation.
Yeah.
This is who I'm going to hold responsible via the memo of September 15th, 2017 with the smartwatches.
Mm.
So if that's what the Mets want to do, and let me tell you, the Mets don't do the brightest things in the world.
Yeah, they don't. I know. Maybe.
So if that's what the Mets wanted to do, they can go ahead and do it. Just to pay me my money, and then I'll go manage someplace else.
Yeah, I guess he'd get a job. I mean, he's never managed before.
I don't know why he wouldn't. Maybe he'd be a bench coach.
Somebody would.
Maybe he'd go to be a bench coach.
Yeah.
Somebody hire him on board. If they think he's a quality manager, he'd get hired.
I don't think the Red Sox had any choice with Alex Cora.
And they had no choice. I don't think the Mets have any choice.
Well, I don't know. I think that one's a little different.
I don't. One was a bench coach, and they knew after 2015 or 2017 who would be held responsible. So one was a bench coach. The other one was a player.
Even though it might look bad, he's been absolved by Major League Baseball.
The Red Sox just met the media, the ownership group, and they said it was an easy decision for both them and Alex Cora.
Well, I would think so.
So they were all on the same page.
Yeah. And he's going to get maybe. Have they announced what the suspension is yet?
No, that's not been announced.
He might get 2 years. I mean, excuse me. It makes a lot of sense if you're the Red Sox and Alex Cora. Break free. He's going to sit around and do nothing for the next couple of years. Does somebody hire him as an analyst?
Maybe.
Or do you become a pariah?
Look, Alex Rodriguez was banned for a year,
and he's the
face of the freaking network.
He is. He's great,
baseball.
So I would think
Remember when the Yankees tried to get out of his contract?
Oh, yeah.
And it was like, no.
Oh, yeah.
No.
I'll accept the suspension. You're paying every dollar.
That's right.
I don't blame him.
It's the way it works.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, A-Rod had a dark cloud hanging over him for a little while, and look at the way he's bounced back.
People forget.
J-Lo.
No, they take pictures of him on the toilet, for crying out loud.
Remember that picture? Looked like he was dressed to get married.
I love it. Well, when you're A-Rod, you know, the monogram towels hanging in the
bathroom.
Some
guys look better on the toilet.
Well, he looks good no matter what. There are no compromising positions when you look like Gallagher.
Towels of all the different hotels I stay.
Very good. There you go. Take whatever's not nailed down, Cap. Good thinking. Yeah, that picture was something, man.
Name the movie. No, the towels you can keep.
That is Ocean's 11.
Very Carmen. Yeah. I love you.
Yes.
You are the greatest.
Who quotes the Ocean's movie?
Well, Ocean's 11's pretty great. Come on.
The original remake.
Yes. I dare you guys to give me a quote from Ocean's 8.
From Ocean's 8?
Give me a quote from Ocean's 8.
Oh, that's the one Sandra Bullock did? I could not give you a quote.
Come on. I want one.
I couldn't do it. I'm sorry.
I could give you one from...
Did you not watch
it? I could quote other Sandra Bullock movies.
Did you guys not watch it?
I did not.
Okay.
But I could quote other Sandra Bullock.
I've watched Ocean's 8.
Was it bad?
I guess I was the only one to give the ladies a shot.
Was it bad?
Guys, was I the only one to give the ladies a shot?
I don't know what that means or what you're insinuating, but
because
I never
they
had...
made an Ocean's movie with an all-female cast, you guys refused to watch it.
I'm open-minded and a gentleman.
You decided to watch it.
They probably missed out on the new Ghostbusters too.
I watched that too. Yeah.
I've never consciously decided I'm not going to watch it. I watched that movie.
It was such a terrible, terrible movie, but I watched it.
Hey, listen, Bridesmaids.
I wanted to see what they were going to do.
Bridesmaids is an all-female movie. That's one of the funniest movies of the last 10 years.
That is a fantastic movie.
It's fantastic. So I just never.
I enjoyed that.
I never came across Ocean's 8 to stop and watch
it's
it.
On,
but I guess shame on me for never seeking
now.
It out. But yeah, I haven't.
It's on cable. No, I was just joking.
I will not seek it out.
If you watched or didn't watch it, it doesn't matter to me.
Yeah.
Who, Ocean's 8?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was okay.
It was terrible.
No, it had a concept. Awkwafina, I believe, was in there. She was pretty good. Yeah.
Who's Awkwafina?
What are you talking about?
She won the Golden Globe.
Come on, you don't know how the hell. How do you not know what Awkwafina is?
I don't know.
It's the bottle of water spelled a little bit differently.
Who is she?
She's a comedian.
Man, Yurko's hip.
Come on,
you
guys.
You gotta stay up with the good kid, man.
What's going on? Would I know her, Chris?
If I saw her,
I don't know what you know.
I believe you would recognize her.
She's pretty famous.
Yeah, she's infamous.
Awkwafina.
She's more than famous.
Yeah.
AWK. Awkwafina. AWKWA.
What was Sandra Bullock's name in Speed?
In Speed, the Wildcat is what Dennis Hopper called her.
Correct.
Remember? That was the
she
tell.
Had the Arizona t-shirt.
She went to Arizona. Her name was, hold on, give me a second. God, I love that movie, too. That young Sandra Bullock. Oh,
so good.
She and Keanu steaming up the screen.
Oh, boy.
Hold on. Oh, my God. Carmen.
I'd like to paint the both of them up a little.
Yes,
bit, huh?
I would. I don't think I'm going to be able to
You're
get this.
You're not going to get it.
Annie. Oh. What was the name of the bad guy Dennis Hopper played?
Son of a. Boy, who remembers the names from Speed? Dennis Hopper was a nothing movie. An upset retired cop.
Howard Payne, there's our scumbag.
That's good. That's Jeff Daniels. Nice. Yes. Very good.
Guys, what was Will Smith's name in iRobot?
I don't know.
Cap, do you know? Cap?
No idea. Oh,
come on.
Just played random movie trivia for 1,000.
Well, we were talking about Sandra Bullock.
Tip of my tongue. Hold on. Oh, Will Smith, yeah, he had the one artificial arm.
What was Clint Eastwood's name in The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly?
Great movie.
Yes.
Great movie.
He has no name.
What is it? Is he the horse with no name?
The man with no name in all those, in the whole trilogy, right?
What was Clint Eastwood's name in the movie where he's the Secret Service agent?
It was
Doc Holliday.
No. That's In the Line of Fire. That's another great movie.
Great movie.
Yeah, it is. Harry, right? Is it Harry?
Frank.
Oh, yeah, Frank. Frank Costanza.
What's the matter with me today? I'm off.
Frank Riley.
Frank.
Frankie Fuqua. You mean Frenchie? Frank Drebin. Knows? No, it's not Frank Drebin.
It is Frank Drebin.
That's Naked Gun.
That's Naked Gun.
No, it's Frank Drebin.
Frank.
I like it.
Oh, my God.
Random movie trivia for 1,000.
Frank.
I just asked if you guys have
seen
those
movies.
Remember,
he was there the day Kennedy was shot. Of course, in the
Frank
movie.
Frank Horrigan.
Wouldn't have got that in a million years. Yeah. That could have been a million-year guess.
Renee Russo.
Oh, I love Renee Russo.
Oh, she's so great.
She's good in Thomas so Crown great. Affair, where she's she was fabulous. Naked.
That's a movie that's the one where the remake is better than the original.
I'm going to be honest.
Thomas Crown Affair?
Yes.
Steve McQueen was in the original.
Steve McQueen and Faye Dunaway were in the first one. The remake is even better.
I liked Renee Russo in Tin Cup.
I like Renee Russo in everything.
Listen, if Renee Russo gets naked in a movie, it's a good movie. Let's call Mr. Skin to find out every time she's naked in a movie.
She's been naked a lot. I love her. Big fan.
Yeah. Good for her.
You know, Yurko's friend Alba, she told me that she was getting painted.
Never naked in front of a good kid.
Colin, you've upset many a listener. In The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, Clint Eastwood is Blondie.
Well, that's what they call him, but he doesn't have a name. That's what they call him.
That's his name. That's Clemenza. Called him Blondie.
If you look up, I bet, on IMDb, it'll say the man with no name.
No, I looked it up. It says Blondie.
Okay.
You upset a lot of people, which forced me to look it up.
Was that Clemenza that called him Blondie?
No, Eli Wallach calls him Blondie.
Yeah, was Eli Wallach in Godfather?
Eli Wallach was in the third Godfather.
What was his name?
Oh, I can't remember. He was the bad Don that tries to turn against Michael in Godfather 3.
Yeah.
Eli Wallach calls him Blondie, but I thought that in those movies he was always referred to as the man with no name. I didn't think he had a title name.
Blondie.
In the screenplays.
IMDb, it says Blondie.
All right.
All right, we got to go, man.
I'll look that up deeper. I think factually that's not true.
Do you think IMDb is lying to me?
Not that they're lying, but I think technically the character is the man with no name. I'm almost 100% sure of that. That if you looked it up, that you'd find out that
he just looked it up.
So you're going against IMDb.
Yes.
Is that
I love it.
That's what we're going with.
All right, boys. Let's
do a little research on the man with no name.
Let's break this one off and do that.
All right, out of here. JD Field Yates coming up on the Carmen and Yurko show. I'm out of here. See you in the morning. Later.
Carmen and Yurko on ESPN Chicago.
Taves still has it. He'll shoot one. He's gone.
And Yurko on ESPN Chicago.
The Blackhawks need every point they can get, and I mean every one. And Jonathan Toews said as much after the game last night. He said, we really can't afford to lose. Now, of course, you're going to lose from time to time, but they need to go on the run of runs to close a six-point gap if they want to sneak in the playoffs in the Western Conference. And they accomplished that goal with the win in Ottawa, rallying from a 2-0 deficit. Now they have to play the Canadiens tonight. On a quick turnaround, I know it's not a far trip, but the second of a back-to-back, Jonathan Toews, Patrick Kane, and Dominic Kubalik, who's in the Rookie of the Year conversation.
How about
the way he's
goals?
Played the last month? Damn. He's the second leading goal scorer on the Blackhawks. They all played a big part in the rally last night. Hawks win. Vegas just fired its coach today. How about that? Gerard Gallant, who accomplished so much in the first couple of years, is out. They hired Peter DeBoer, who was fired earlier this year in San Jose. The coaching carousel in the NHL has been crazy this year. But the Blackhawks, again, need every point they can get. So I'm glad they got two with the overtime win last night.
Three-point night for Johnny Toews.
Yes.
He's having multiple point games, a number of games out of the last 10.
Those three, and they played together a lot last night, all had multiple points, right? Kane had two assists. Kubalik scored twice, didn't he? I think he had both goals in regulation, and Jonathan Toews lit the lamp for the game winner and had a couple of helpers. So
I'm sure he's
done.
Got more than 37 game winners. He might just beat Eddie Olczyk by one or two.
How many you think?
Over the course of his career.
You want me to check? By the way, I checked one other thing, too. You can stop calling. You can stop tweeting. Blondie is what Eli Wallach calls Clint Eastwood in The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly because the character doesn't have a name. The name of the character from the trilogy is the man with no name. Yes, Blondie is what he's referred to by Eli Wallach. It's the man with no name. So you can stop calling. And you can stop tweeting on that front. I can check and see exactly how many goals, game-winning goals, Jonathan Toews has. In
this version, when they've gone to 3-on-3, I think he's had 12 just in the 3-on-3.
Has he really?
Yeah, it was on the news this morning. At least 12 into 3-on-3. That gives him a little bit of an advantage over players where things ended in ties all the time.
66.
66. Woo.
But overtime's got a lot to do with that, too. I wonder how many of his goals were overtime goals.
I don't know that. I can't break
those
down
are
for
nice.
You right now.
66 game winners.
66 game winning goals.
It's like you and Danny saw that at the same time, and there's a little bit of a celebration going on there.
Do you know how many game winning goals Patrick Kane has?
102.
No. That'd be kind of crazy. Don't think. 62.
Oh, okay.
So they're both in the 60s in terms of game-winning goals. Clutch, crunch time, baby. Nicely done.
So a greater percentage of Johnny Toews' goals are game-winners as opposed to Patrick Kane's.
I would say, yeah, because he's got fewer goals.
Right.
Yes, correct.
Yeah, a greater percentage. Yeah, that's why I say it the way I said it.
Yeah, you're at 100%. Mm-hmm. And I'd say it's probably a pretty substantial difference.
Could be.
You know, Kaner's got a lot more just goals,
period. Kaner got 500 yet?
Not goals yet. He's almost at 1,000 points. He's three away from joining the 1,000-point club. He's at 380 career goals and 617 career assists.
It's going to be a celebration of 1,000, isn't it?
Yes, 997 for Patrick Kane. He's about to be a 1,000-point scorer, Yurko. And Toews will get there, I think, at some point, too. He's missed more games in his career. He's a little bit farther behind. But these guys aren't slowing down, really, and they'll probably play well into their 30s, and I would think Jonathan Toews gets there.
They're both in what, year 11 or year 12?
This is year 13 for both of them already.
For both of them.
Didn't that go by fast, Yurko?
Well, when you're winning Stanley Cup championships, it has a tendency to go fast.
I guess you're right.
That was a blur, the 3 and 6 years.
Yes.
It was a blur.
Congrats to Jimbo Covert, one of our favorites, right?
Yep.
Jimbo is in the Hall of Fame. We've been saying for a long time that had Jimbo never gotten hurt and had the devastating injuries towards the end of his career, he probably would have made it. Jimbo Covert was on the 1980s all-decade NFL team. He was the only player up until this morning from that 1980s all-decade team that was not in Pro Football's Hall of Fame. That's how good he was. Bill Parcells once said that Jimbo Covert was the best tackle in the NFC in his era, and it wasn't even close. Now, Anthony Munoz, of course, in the AFC was probably regarded as the greatest tackle to ever play.
And Slater, Jackie Slater was a pretty good player
good
for the Rams.
In the 70s, right?
But Jimbo was different than Jackie. Jackie was much taller, you know, rangier arms and that kind of thing with his body style, both in the pass and in the run. I think that's what differentiated Jimbo Covert from other tackles.
Parcells said he was the best tackle in the NFC, and Parcells famously said, that's the guy that can one-on-one with Lawrence Taylor. They don't need any help. That's how good Jimbo Covert was. And we're glad he's in, and we're glad that this committee that they put together for the centennial year, and they're adding these Hall of Famers, appreciated Jimbo's career enough to say, yeah, even though it was kind of short-lived, he deserves a spot in Canton, so we're very happy for him. Now, remember, Jimbo's first 4 years, Yurk, here are his similarity scores according to Pro Football Reference. Now, it tails off by the end of his career because all the injuries.
Right.
The next year was truncated because of the strike. Remember, he only played 9 games. Then the injury set in, and he was never really the same. I think he only played 9 games the year after that. But here, through the first 4 years of his career, here are the similarity scores. Willie Rofe, who's in the Hall of Fame. Ryan Clady. Mick Tinglehoff, who's in the Hall of Fame. Tyron Smith, who's got a shot at the Hall of Fame someday. Dare I say he'll probably be in. Jonathan Ogden, Hall of Fame. Randall McDaniel, who you played against, Hall of Fame. Kyle Turley, Joe Jacoby, Travis Frederick, who's going to have a shot at the Hall of Fame, and Russ Grimm, who's in the Hall of Fame. So there you go. Congrats to Jimbo. And Ed Sprinkle, another former Bear that got in.
Yeah, congratulations. I remember seeing the name Ed Sprinkle when it came up when all the media pundits from the papers were putting that top 100 list together, and Ed Sprinkle was on there.
Yes, he was on there a lot, right?
Right, he was. And who's he, who's he, who's he? Well, here's who he is. He's a Hall of Famer.
Ed Sprinkle played forever and a day ago. I mean, most of us don't. I can't give you much on Ed Sprinkle other than just recognizing the name from Bears history. But, again, congrats to a couple of former Bears who are now in. I thought they did a nice job with the show this morning on NFL Network on Good Morning Football. Our buddy Kyle Brandt was teasing it with us yesterday.
Yes, and remember, the University of Pittsburgh produced Jimbo Covert. They had Russ Grimm on that offensive line. Billy Frelick. Yeah. Mark May. I mean, that's a pretty solid group.
A lot of guys in the Hall
of offensive line. Yeah, and right. Joe Moore used to be the offensive line coach at the University of Pittsburgh. Became a little more famous when he was here with the University of Notre Dame with Lou Holtz.
We've got Jeff Dickerson coming up at 1 to talk about the Bears, talk about the move back to Halas for the entirety of training camp. We discussed that a little bit during Crosstalk. Field Yates at 1:30 to preview the championship games on Sunday. We'll do Crosstalk with Waddle and Sylvie a little bit later on. If you want to join us, 312-332-3776. That's the number. You can also hit us up on Twitter at Carmen DeFalco or at Yurko64. That is Yurko with the J and the number 64. Merkin's at a big important meeting today. It's nice to have Danny Zetterman sticking around. You staying the whole show, Daniel?
Of course.
Wow. All right. Danny on the other side of the glass.
Great to have you on board, Danny.
With Chris Bleck as we roll through the afternoon with you here live in our first Midwest Bank State Street Studios on ESPN 1000. Yeah, the Bears are going to move back to Halas Hall. They're not going to go on the road anymore. A lot of years at Platteville all through the 80s and 90s. And then ever since, I think, what, about 2003, 2002, 2003, York, down to beautiful Bradley Bourbonnais. They did wonders for that town and that community. Think about when we first started going down there. There was nothing. And a lot kind of sprouted up around it. The facilities at Olivet Nazarene are second to none
well,
now.
They're first class.
First class all the way.
Top notch.
I mean, and it's this little tiny school in Kankakee County, you know, and so good for them. They benefited greatly from the Bears. They might not be happy that the Bears are leaving, but when you invest upwards of 100 schmil in your new facility at Lake Forest, and you don't even really have a training camp anymore, what were there, 9 practices last year? 10 practices?
That's about it.
I mean, at some point, these franchises are all starting to say, we don't really need to go anywhere anymore. It's changed. It's different. There are no more two-a-days. They're not in, they're really just in shells most of the time, right? I mean, they're very rarely in full pads anymore. And I think it's like two-thirds, a little over two-thirds, or right around two-thirds of the league right now, trains at home in their facility for training camp. They don't go anywhere. In the next few years, it'll probably be almost every team.
Like I said, all four teams I played for, we trained right at the facility for training camp. So you didn't have to move anything. There wasn't a problem. There were no more expenses. The fans could come down to the stadium and watch their guys in the practice facility. That's the way it is. But does Halas Hall have enough parking for people? Or are you going to see a shuttle service happening?
Well, I read that they did. In the brief story I read about this yesterday, they said they have added parking. But have they added 8,000 parking spots? No, I would think that you'd have to shuttle. Now, the good thing for them is Halas Hall, if anybody's ever been up there, you know where about it is off of 94 in Town Line Road. There's a huge office complex.
Yes.
Now, those offices obviously have employees and lots of parking spots, and they need those parking spots. But I'm wondering if there's some land there. It's such a vast stretch of land. If there's some there that they've taken over, that they will continue to take over, where they can accommodate lots of cars, lots of parking. Otherwise, there'll be shuttles. I'm assuming similar to the way they do it when the BMW goes to Conway Farms, which is just on the south side of Town Line Road when you get off there at Route 60. They shuttle people to and from Conway Farms, I would imagine, for the 3 weeks of training camp that the Bears will accommodate fans.
Also, west of there, you've got the mall in Vernon Hills over there.
You do, about 2 miles maybe west of there, mile and a half, 2 miles west.
Let's go to the ice rink there. The Ice Dogs used to play up there.
Is that right?
Oh, yeah.
Is that the Vernon Hills ice rink?
Yeah. Vernon Hills, yeah. Right there, Carm.
I don't, you know, like
Yurko, just south of the mall.
Like Yurko said, they trained even in his day, always at the facility. So I don't think it matters one way or another. It used to be fun when we'd go down to Bourbonnais for a couple of days.
Right. But if you're a fan and you want to go see them in training camp, you're going to be able to go see them in training camp.
Yeah, exactly.
Instead of going to Bourbonnais, now you are just going to go up to Lake Forest and you're going to watch it there.
Yeah.
And whatever restrictions they want to put on people, whether they want to tell you to keep your phones in your car, whatever they want to do, you can't take pictures, you can't be on Twitter, you can't be on the gram, you can't do this, you can't do that. Guess what?
Yeah.
They now get to implement whatever rules they want.
Yes, they do. Teams like that.
Yeah.
And at some point, you'd think they build their own stadium.
It's a team that doesn't value their training camp anyway, so what the hell's the difference?
Most teams don't.
Well, that's not true.
Someone asked me again.
That's not true.
Someone asked me again over the weekend if I think the Bears will handle the preseason differently next year. And if Mitchell Trubisky will play. And that's a great question. I don't think they're going to deviate from what they've done the last couple of years. Now, that's a mistake. But do you think they'll play Trubisky? You think all of a sudden they're going to change? Matt Nagy's going to change his mind? Or Ryan Pace is going to change his mind and they're going to play Mitchell Trubisky in the preseason?
If you bring a veteran quarterback in that's not Chase Daniel, Jan Daniel, that you think is going to, you're bringing somebody in to motivate, aren't you? You can't keep pampering. You're bringing somebody in to motivate.
So you think he'll play?
To light a fire under Trubisky's ass. That's what you're bringing a guy in here for. If if this is continued pampering,
and he's
and
the starter,
we're just expecting some sort of magical development to happen.
Yeah,
he gets less jittery in the pocket, more confident, brighter. Things slow down for him. If they just expect that to happen without it happening in practice, then I don't get it.
Coming up next, Charles Barkley on Lauri Markkanen. Interesting stuff from Waddle and Silva yesterday. 312-332-3776. That is the phone number if you'd like to ring us up. It's Carmen and Yurko on ESPN 1000.
The soon-to-be Hall of Famer, Michael Wilbon, joins us for Can't Miss Radio at 5 o'clock. The changes continue for our Bears, and will changes happen with our Bulls?
All of that and more. We start at 2, Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000.
Crosstalk a little over an hour from now. Hope everyone's having a wonderful day. Make sure to save us as a favorite on the TuneIn app to get all the podcasts. You can also visit ESPNChicagoPodcast.com. Follow the radio station on Instagram at ESPN_Chicago. That's at ESPN_Chicago. Charles Barkley was on the station yesterday with Waddle and Sylvie. It's always entertaining and fun. He's going to do 2 hours with the guys at Chicago Cut the week of the All-Star game in about a month when the TNT crew and everybody in the NBA world rolls into Chicago for the annual All-Star festivities at the United Center next month. This was Barkley on the Bulls and specifically the big man. The Finn, Lauri Markkanen.
Man, what the hell happened to Lauri Markkanen?
I know.
Good question. Nobody knows.
I mean, I loved him coming out of college, and last year he was going in the right direction. I have no idea what's happening to him. I mean, I thought he was going to be not, I don't want to compare him to Dirk Nowitzki, but Dirk Nowitzki-like.
Right.
And it's ugly, man. It's ugly.
Charles, we talked to Jeff Van Gundy a while ago, and he said, you know, as a coach would in some ways, it's up to the player to develop. And I don't disagree with that 100%, but isn't it also up to the coach to develop the talent as well?
It's definitely a combination of both. I mean, because like, okay, you take the Portland Trailblazers who stink. Like, I think at some point that coach might get fired, but he has nothing to do with them team. That team just stinks. And I think Terry Stotts is a good coach. I mean, he did a fantastic job last year. But sometime, man, you know, we blame the coaches because we don't want to get on the coaches behind. On the players behind, but I'm not going to lie, man. I've been very disappointed in the Bulls. I thought they were going to be contending for a playoff spot.
So did we.
Oh, my goodness. But they are awful.
You know, you mentioned Markkanen. We thought he was going to be, like, quote, our star, or someone who could develop into that. He's averaging 15-6. You could probably still average 15-6 in the NBA.
Yeah. I you know, it's a weird thing. I'm not going to lie. Like, I actually thought he was going to be All-Star. And I have no idea what happened because he don't even look like the same guy.
That's Barkley yesterday with the guys. He's not taking as many shots either. And maybe you think, well, that's understandable. Zach takes a lot of shots. Kobe White's going to take up some offense when he's on the floor, although they're not on the floor together a ton. But Otto Porter's been out of the lineup for most of the year. Like, why is Lowry taking three and a half fewer shots this year than he did last year? And that, I think, explains the points per game because his shooting percentages, Yurko, aren't that off. Real quick, I'll just give you his percentages this year and then his career, okay?
All right, go ahead.
This year, from the floor, he's shooting 42.3%. For his career, he's at 43%. And there's not much of a dip from last year.
Right.
Three-point percentage, 34.9% this year. Career, 35.8. Again, you're talking about like a percentage point.
Minuscule.
Free throw percentage, 82.1%. This one's got the greatest disparity. Career, 84.8%. So a couple of percentage points there. But it is, in a sense, minuscule. But the rebounds are way down. The shots are down. The points are down.
How about minutes played?
Let me look real quick.
How about another thing? Yes, minutes played. Is he playing less than he's been playing, or is it at his average? Because if you give me minutes played, then I've kind of got an area where I can go ahead and attack.
30.1, which is down about a minute and a half from last year.
So, again, minuscule.
Minuscule. He's playing 30 minutes a night. Like, he's not taking as many shots.
Sounds like he's become less aggressive.
That's kind of what it does
sound like.
Sounds like,
you know, and you're saying less rebounds. Have they positioned him someplace so far away from the basket that he can't operate?
No, I don't think so.
Well, that's the other question you ask yourself, because when you're not getting offensive rebounds, you know,
right.
Are his offensive rebounds down?
Down 0.2 rebounds.
It's not a ton. Just then he's lacking aggressiveness.
Three-point attempts are the exact same.
Lacking a want for the ball.
Exact same as last year,
is
maybe.
Is he attacking the basket as much as he attacked the basket in the past?
I mean, I would agree. I think we'd all agree that he hasn't developed the way everybody hoped. You know, maybe after last year where he averaged nearly 19 a game, you thought, okay, he'd be a 20-point-per-game scorer. But lack of aggressiveness seems to be the biggest thing because there aren't, like, these huge drops in his numbers. The only number where you see a significant disparity from last year to this year is in the number of shots per game he is taking. So is that it's something with the offense? Is that he's not aggressive enough? Remember Joe Colley, when he joined us a couple weeks ago, who covers the Bulls for the Sun-Times, he thinks it has something to do with the added weight he put on. He said he doesn't look as quick and as smooth and as fluid as he has in years past. And he bulked up a little because he wanted to be able to withstand the rigors of the league a little bit more, maybe play in the post pounding a little bit more.
And you think as the year goes on, his numbers become better? As some of that weight naturally sheds off?
Be interesting to see in the second half of the season, I suppose.
Though I've really never seen a guy that was more physically fit and more muscular have that be a negative on him.
Well, I don't know. I mean, Joe was just saying in terms of the way he looks running the floor and sort of with, you know.
Did he put 25 pounds
no,
on?
No, of course not. No, not that.
Now, what did he weigh to what he weighs now? Is it another one of these?
Did he put on 15 pounds?
Small little dips.
Yeah, you 10, know, 10 to 15 pounds?
For a 255-pound guy. Say he's 250, he weighs 265.
Right.
That's an incremental increase.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, it's not like he went from 200 to 240 pounds, where you'd be talking about a very substantial increase in weight.
I mean, you're talking about 6%.
6%.
That doesn't blow you out of the water.
I don't know. I don't know what it is. I don't think anybody's got a good answer. Even analysts that watch every game are like, I'm not sure.
And to maintain that weight gain is difficult, especially if you put it on muscle mass.
Yeah. All right, we can grab some calls coming up, and we're also going to talk to Jeff Dickerson and get the latest on the Bears. A couple of Bears greats, including Jimbo Covert. We're so happy about that. Going to Canton into Pro Football's Hall of Fame. We'll preview the championship games with Field Yates at 1:30. 312-332-3776. It's Carmen and Yurko on ESPN 1000.
Carmen and Yurko on ESPN Chicago.
You look like you're champing at the bit over there, partner.
Well, it was rivalry week. You're talking about the Chicago Wolves action. Went over and took a bottle of that Frank Sinatra Jack Daniels.
Oh, yeah?
For our guy Patty Nagel. Oh, said, hello, how are you?
That was nice of you.
It's my guy. You know, you got to take care of people every once in a while.
Yurko gave out some nice Christmas gifts. I did for Whiskey Wednesday last Wednesday, the beautiful bottle of Frank Sinatra.
That was my go-to gift this year.
I'll tell you, that's a beautiful package it comes in. I mean, it is gorgeous.
Thank you, Carmen. I appreciate you complimenting me like that. I do have a beautiful... Oh,
no.
The bottle is beautifully packaged. Yes, I agree with you.
Not only... It's not a 750. It's a one-liter bottle. So not only you get a little extra juice in there, it comes in a gorgeous case, and there's a beautiful book inside celebrating the relationship and the...
That's my go-to gift.
The love affair between Jack Daniels and Frank Sinatra over the years is fabulous, Yurko.
You and Pat Nagel, I gave you gifts.
Whiskey Wednesday's back tonight, so I'll put up a video on my Twitter feed later tonight.
How about something all us humans can get?
This is something that everybody can buy, and I'll tell you this, Yurko. In a sense, it's local. It's not from Illinois, but it's damn close. So
I like that.
Yes, it is a craft distiller from the Midwest, and you will be learning all about it later tonight when I post my video on
Twitter. I wonder who it is.
You'll have to wait and see.
I wonder who it is.
Your mind is racing.
It is. Have you been down to Three Floyds thing that they got down? They got a distillery down there.
I haven't. In Muncie? Munster,
Indiana.
I've never been. I like their beer, but I've never been.
You should come on
I'm
down.
I'm a big fan of their
beer.
I'll
buy you lunch one day on a Saturday. You, Karen, the kids come down.
I'll take you up on that.
We'll put some food down their throats, and you and I will drink some whiskey.
I'm up for it.
All right.
Carmen and Yurko. JD's going to join us in just a few minutes. We'll talk about the Bears moving back to Halas for training camp. Just some other Bears news and notes with JD, too. You know, JD was supposed to be part of our roundtable last week. And that was a lot of fun, by the way. And a big thanks again to Dan Weeder and Mark Potash
for stopping by.
It was a great hour live out at Twin Peaks in Oak Brook Terrace. JD got really sick last week, so he was like out of commission for a while. So we'll catch up with JD in a few, and then Field Yates joins us at 1:30. Eddie's on the north side on ESPN 1000. Hey, Eddie.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Great. How are you?
What do you need?
When you want to be a great NBA player, there's one thing you need to be. It's selfish. If Markkanen gets selfish and takes as many a shot that he could get and they feed him, he would be a superstar in the league. But he's too nice. They throw it to him. He throws it back to him. He needs to take it in and do it. Because all the great players of all the times, they're selfish. You should see how many shots they take. Just look at their stats all the way. And as many minutes as he can be out there, too.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's about all I can see.
Thanks, Eddie. I mean, the stats back it up. He's playing the same number of minutes, and the shots are about three fewer on a per-game basis than they were a year ago. where have those shots gone? You'd say, well, if Otto Porter were healthy, maybe you'd understand it, but he's been out most of the year. Is Coby White's can take some more shots, obviously, when he's in the game. And again, I feel like, Chris, have they played together a lot? Have they been on the floor together a lot, Lowry and Coby? I feel like they haven't been a ton. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong, but
yeah, I mean, they don't use them together in action. So right. Even if they're on the court together, like that's the thing that I don't quite understand with the way they use Lowry Markkanen is they don't put him in pick and roll where he can or dive to the basket. He's basically always standing
like
out
he's
by
a wing.
Himself.
He's like standing on the wing and waiting. You know?
Right.
Like,
anyone else in the league would utilize a big like that who has that talent as the guy to set the screen.
The guy who's going to be willing to shoot 6, 7, 8 threes a game and make a decent clip. I mean, yeah.
I feel like we saw a little of that last season. That like that's how they were using him, and for some reason it just hasn't really translated.
Look, a lot of it could just be pure usage then, and play design, and what the coaching staff wants, and it all comes back to: is this coaching staff, is this head coach, the right man to develop these important players? And it looked like you really won the Jimmy Butler trade, but that was sort of based on Lowry getting better after his rookie year because he showed some very impressive things. He showed an impressive skill set. He showed the ability to score early in his career. And you thought, okay, if he gets better and he goes like this, you know, if the arc's like this, if we're going up and up and up, Yerk, well, then, yeah, you could have projected that they're going to win that trade. If they're questioning now whether they want to keep him long term or if they think he's, I mean, and Brian Windhorst intimated on a podcast earlier this week that they might not think that he's that guy. Well, can you really look back and say we won the Butler trade? I mean, is Zach LaVine enough to have won you the Jimmy Butler trade? I'm not so sure. Zach's a fine player, fine score, you know, good scorer, but not a very complete player. And I don't know that you've won that trade if Lowry doesn't turn out to be really good. And at this point, in his year three, like Lowry's not really that good.
Yeah, you're starting to figure out exactly what you have.
And
it's not enough is the answer.
Yeah, and is this coaching staff the right staff to get the most out of him? It's a very fair question.
Did they say nice guys finish last?
Yeah.
Because
that's not always true.
Is he too nice of a guy?
Is he too nice?
Well, you got to have a little bit of nasty in your car.
Yeah, I know.
You can be nice, but you better be able to get nasty.
I know it, Yerk. John's in Rolling Meadows. What's up, John?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. Hey, I got a question for you, Carmen. You know, yeah, we got Moncada at third base, and that's great, but we got so much money. Why don't we talk to Colorado about what they want for Arenado? I mean, there's a leader in the locker room. He's young. He's aggressive. He's the best third baseman around, period. He hits the ball. This guy would be a great leader for this young club.
I think the problem there, John, is what they're going to ask for in return. You know,
White Sox should make a move.
You're going to want. They're going to be asking for Luis Robert. Not. I don't think they want to give up Luis Robert.
They're not going to give away Robert.
And I know what you're saying. Well, why wouldn't you give up a guy that's never taken a single swing in the big leagues for a guy like Nolan Arenado? First of all, there's a huge age discrepancy. There's a huge
cost discrepancy.
Cost discrepancy. I mean, they feel very good about Robert, and most of baseball feels good that he's going to be a fine center fielder and can be an anchor for your team. So, they're going to ask for players like that, and I don't think the White Sox want to start giving those guys up. I think what they've done is good. They've gone out in free agency, and they've plugged some holes, which is what free agency should be used for. Like, when you have to go out when your team is bad and you have to spend a ton of money on bringing in free agents and you think, okay, this is what's going to solve our problem. We're going to fix everything that's gone wrong with free agents, with, you know, generally speaking, older free agents that are no longer wanted by their previous club. And you get into, like, look, the White Sox have tried that before in the last decade. The Padres have tried it. Like, teams try it. And what normally happens, Yerk? It blows up in their face. We always say winning the offseason doesn't mean you win in the regular season. But when you go out and you use free agency as a tool to plug some holes that you have in your organization or your big league club, but you're surrounding these free agents with core guys that you are developing in your system, yeah, that's normally how you succeed in baseball. The foundation right now appears to be Moncada, Giolito, hopefully Robert, right?
So you bring everything in from the bottom, and then what you end up leaving is top out, which is the most expensive players end up being replaced when you move them to get younger talent in here.
And so I think how they've attacked free agency has been good, and I think the plan, like, it's going to bear some fruit here, I think, this season and in subsequent seasons. But now to start trading away some of your cost-controlled prospects, your affordable prospects for Nolan Arenado. Look, Nolan Arenado makes a lot of sense for the Cubs in many ways because they're at different stages here, right? I mean, you know, like, I don't know that the White Sox have to go out and bring in a player like that when they have all the talent that they have in their system.
It's weird trying to figure out exactly where the Cubs are. Yeah. Where are the Cubs? They're a team that won 97, they won 99, they won 106. You know what I'm saying? 96.
They're over-unders, 86.
Right. This is a team that has won, and now its wins have come down to like 94. They've come down to 83 last year. So where are they? If I plot the graph, where are they? They're on their way down.
On their way down.
Heading into a little bit of a valley if they can't right the ship and figure out exactly what's going on. Their craft is taking on water.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which is a problem. So if they're going to stop that, then they got to figure out exactly what they are and what they're going to do. Now they're trying to unload contracts. They're trying to get underneath their priorities to get under a certain number.
Yeah,
that's their priority. And if you can win games, let's win some games.
It's also important to remember that Arenado's got an opt out. I think after 2 years. Now you think, well, he'll never opt out. He's making $35 million. What if these next 2 years? I think it's after 2 years. What if these next 2 years look like the last three for Nolan Arenado and salaries keep going up, Yerk? Maybe he does opt out and he gets 38 or 40. I don't know. I mean, you don't know what it's going to look like in 2 years. So, like, you could trade for Arenado and he could opt out of a deal in 2 years. That's another thing to remember. Again, I think it's after the 2021 season that he can opt out of that deal. And as far-fetched as that may seem, with his salary, he's so good. I'm not so sure. So I don't think it's anything that the White Sox should be engaging in at this point.
But they've got plenty of money to spend.
Well, they do. I wish they would have spent it on Garrett Cole.
All right. They didn't spend it on Garrett Cole.
I know. Here, let me look at his contract real quick. And then we'll get to JD. Is JD ready, Danny? Oh, I'll talk to JD here in a second. Hold on. So the opt-out for Arenado, Yerk, is, after the 2021 season, he can opt out of the remaining one, two, three, looks like three, four, 5 years of that deal. All right, let's get to our man, Jeff Dickerson.
Let us get back to a certain team from a certain Midwestern town that starts with a C, ends with an O, and in the middle is Hickag.
The hottest Bears update in the game.
I'm ESPN Chicago Bears reporter Jeff Dickerson, and here is the latest from around Chicago.
The man only spits hot fire.
Because I spit hot fire.
Suits so crisp, he irons them twice. He's Jeff Dickerson.
Go Bears!
He's at Dickerson ESPN on Twitter. Make sure you follow him. Read all of his great stuff at ESPN.com and NFL Nation. He covers the Bears. He joins Carmen and Yurko now on ESPN 1000. I mean, just a boatload of memories that we've compiled over the years, JD, driving down I-57. And it's no more, no mas.
You know, I was going through my pictures last night. And I came across so many pictures of the three of us under that hot, sweaty tent with the Bourbonnais flies circling around. I've got a picture there when my son Parker was, I think, 4 or 5, on stage with the three of us doing the show. I look back and I found a picture of my old dorm room, Club 6, that I had to vacate when John Fox took over and kicked us all out. How every year was like an annual rite where I would walk into Club 6, walk into the bathroom, turn on the water in the bathtub, and it would be brown. And it would have to run for a couple hours to get the brown water out. But those are the things, guys, that I will remember. I'll remember going to dinner at Brickstone. We found Mall Hibachi a couple of years ago.
Oh, boy.
And you can talk to anyone on that Bears beat, and they will know Mall Hibachi, where they squirt the sake in your mouth going around the table.
Hey.
Now, JD, was that place even there when you guys first started going to Bourbonnais?
I have no idea.
It was such a dusty town, and like it kind of grew up around the Bears going there, you know?
Let me give you the backstory to Mall Hibachi, right? So John Fox, in his wisdom, kicks everyone off campus, and now we have to go stay at the, I think it's the Spring Hill Suites or the Fairfield Inn or one of those. It's basically the only hotel by the mall, or not the only hotel, but it was an okay hotel. Well, across this little field is the mall in Bourbonnais, and I had never been to the mall before. So one day, we're driving back to the hotel, and we see Hibachi. There's like a Hibachi restaurant in this mall in Bourbonnais. That was about 3 years ago. And guys, that was a game changer because it gave us a second place to go besides Brickstone. And then it gave you unlimited sake.
Boy, you can't beat it.
And you could only do that like once or twice every camp because the amount of calories consumed that night between the sake and the Sapporo and the Hibachi was too much. But we found Mall Hibachi, and I'll forever be grateful to Mall Hibachi.
A lot of memories, man.
A lot of chasing guys around on golf carts.
That's right.
You know, a lot of standing around on move-in day. The Bears actually did us a big favor in their cutting access in that, you know, it used to be you used to have to literally stand on the grass in front of the player's dorm until they would report until midnight. And there were a few times where there were some questionable holdouts, like Devin Hester held out. Remember that after his second year? Remember the great Thomas Jones?
Yep.
Didn't show up till like 11:59 p.m.
Yep.
And you had to be out there with no food on this grass in the hot Bourbonnais sun for 12 hours. Now, the Bears came back a few years ago and said, you guys can only be here for an hour or an hour and a half. So that was like a godsend to me. But just lots of memories, lots of fans, lots of Waddle jerseys, you know, lots of Yurko autographs.
Oh,
it's a lot going on down there that will be missed, absolutely.
How will they accommodate all the fans? They have the ample space. They can't, so it'll be a much smaller group of people.
The fans? When's the last time you guys went to Hallis Hall?
I haven't been to Hallis in quite some time, JD.
The word would be never.
Okay, well, there's always a first. There's always time for that to happen. Hallis Hall, guys, is located in the very back of an industrial park.
Right.
There's no infrastructure built in to accommodate thousands and thousands of fans. There's no parking to accommodate all those fans.
Will they shuttle people kind of like the way they do to Conway Farms down the street? Is that what they'd have to do?
They could. Like you're talking like with the BMW place
right,
farm?
Right, correct.
I mean, they could, but there's no place to put the fans when you get to practice. There's only so much space. So they have really done a good job of upgrading not just the building, but they built a brand new practice field kind of set back in the far corner.
Mm-hmm.
But, guys, there's not a lot of space for fans to sit. I mean, I guess they could bring in some bleachers, I guess. But, you know, there's only so much land right there. And then there's, like, the fescue in the forest. And there's the train. And there's the train tracks. I mean, you can only go so far. So I don't know what they do. I mean, I'm sure it'll be, they said, free public tickets, right? It'll be some sort of lottery system.
Right.
I haven't even asked them what their plan is, but I can tell you that, you know, you can't have 5,000 people there watching practice.
Okay.
That doesn't work, and I don't think they want 5,000 people there watching practice. It's not built for that. It is built, though, for an NFL team with 90 guys on the offseason roster to have themselves a pretty comfortable camp.
That's good.
And the rookies will stay at the hotel, which is down, you know, off of Milwaukee and around Route 60. So that's fine. There's room for them. The veterans, I'm sure, will be at home. Everyone's got the nice lockers, the facilities. At the end of the day, you go home, which is fine with me.
And, you know, no more carrying TVs into the dorm room, like all that. You said it's just a convenience, I guess, for the players. And this would probably be a bigger deal, you know, 15 years ago when camp was still camp and it was 6 weeks
right.
And there were 2-a-days and they hit a lot and they had the pads on. I mean, there's just really not a lot to see anymore anyway.
Especially if they're going to cut it down to 2 exhibition games.
Yeah, I mean, there's not a whole lot to see. I guess the biggest, like, detriment, I suppose, would be, and I think most fans would tell you this, that they get the most out of, like, being there with their young kids.
Agreed.
And they get autographs, and the access is usually pretty good, you know, like stuff like that. I think that's the one bummer for most people is that it's really a great thing for kids, and now that's going to be very limited, obviously.
Listen, one thing I love that Matt Nagy did the last 2 years. Now, I was on a training camp for personal reasons 2 years ago, but last year was my first camp with Nagy. Those guys would stay out there and sign autographs for a long time after practice. That was great. Under Fox, they would run off the field. It was horrible, right? But Nagy wanted to, at least the Bears wanted to make sure that they were given fans an opportunity to get autographs from not just average players, but also really good players, pictures. So I like that. I thought last year, in terms of being fan-friendly, was the best that I had personally seen since, you know, the Tressman Lovey days. And that was more of like a, at least with, see, when Emery took over, he put the cameras in for the players. And that was harder than to leave campus to go out, you know?
Mm.
Lovey, if you were a veteran, and I don't have to tell you guys this.
He kind of let
I
you mean, do your thing, right?
You did your thing. Yeah. I mean, listen, if you're a great player and you wanted to go out and hang out with some locals or what have you at the bar, I mean, that's your choice. I mean, he let those established players tend to do that stuff sometimes. But when Trestman took over and Emery, that kind of ended. So the feeling of camp is way different. Remember there used to be nighttime practices?
Oh, God, yeah.
And that was like everyone went out those nights just to socialize because didn't have to get up the next morning until later. Everything is different now. Everything is early. It's not really designed for the great fan experience as far as the timing anymore. So, I mean, what was the practices this year? Like 8 o'clock in the morning? I mean, yes. Nagy had those guys going really early.
They were early, yep.
So if you're going to do that and you just spent all this money upgrading your home facility, it just makes sense to move camp. I hate it for the people of Bourbonnais.
Yeah.
I love those people.
Right.
But
it was those night practices that produced the animosity between Urlacher, Mike Brown, and Curtis Enos.
Cedric Benson.
Thank Correct. You. Cedric Benson. Yeah, yes. That was the running back. Out of Texas.
That was a memory.
Right. That's when you saw a little animosity
there. There was the daytime practice when Martellus Bennett and Kyle Fuller.
Oh, yeah.
That was one of the better fights. There was a couple of things that I was thinking about as far as fights. That was a good fight. I mean, it wasn't a good fight. It was like a real fight.
It was a real fight.
It was one-sided, but it was a real fight. When Jeremiah Ratliff lost his marbles a couple years ago, that was kind of scary.
Oh, God, yeah, I remember that.
That, like, wouldn't quiet down. Eesh. Yeah. I don't know what was up there. I mean, it was just back and forth, and he really just couldn't get himself calm, and that was kind of foreshadowing for what would happen down the road. Kyle Long, whenever you knew Kyle was in a bad mood, there was going to be a fight. He started multiple fights, and some of them were like he was just out there looking to fight,
right.
which was not good. And that was kind of near the end where you could tell that he wasn't the same player.
Counterproductive. Tell
you, when you know you're going out there and you're not feeling good and you can't do what you used to do, you start looking to fight people. That's not good. But for all those memories, there were also a lot of a lot of good memories. Not a lot of winners covered out there.
No, not too many.
Not a lot of winners, but
not lately anyway. JD, I'm going to ask you this as we let you go. What's the one thing you're sure of that the Bears are going to accomplish this offseason?
Sure. What one thing I'm sure
you're
of?
You're sure of. Like, you know this is part of the plan and they have to get it done and they
will. Well, they're going to absolutely address tight end. I mean, what happened with Burton now in the surgery makes it that he's got to be on the team for a while.
Mm-hmm.
They can't just let him go, and he's got more money due this upcoming season, and their hands are tied with this one. So, but they, you know, no matter what they said about Shaheen or him, they got to find some people that can actually catch the ball and be productive, reliable tight ends. I would also say, I mean, getting another quarterback in here is paramount to everything that's going to happen. I think that's the most important thing. You know, I can't tell you who that's going to be, but it better be someone that can play and play immediately if he has to. So I think that is part of the plan. It's just kind of going through the process as to who's available for what price and who wants to come here and potentially be a, you know, kind of in the background until the time comes when they have to break glass in case of emergency. But I will leave you guys with this, okay?
Mm-hmm.
As we watch the Tennessee Titans this weekend in the AFC Championship game, and I'm not thrilled about that because I wanted to see Lamar play on Championship Sunday, but I digress. You know what happened to Tennessee is pretty lucky, right? Like, usually speaking, you don't have a guy like Ryan Tannehill
available
on the team,
yeah,
bench your former second overall pick in week 6, and then have that guy lead you on some magical ride to the conference title game. For the Titans, it worked. It's not easy, guys. And you got to have a certain degree of luck. And unfortunately for the Bears, when it comes to quarterbacks, this hasn't been the luckiest franchise, has it?
No, it has not.
It really hasn't. So, I mean, it's great to think about the names that could be here, and there are absolutely either UFAs like Mariota, like Case Keenum. You could possibly try to acquire an Andy Dalton. All this stuff makes sense. It's great, but it doesn't always go according to plan. And for this team, for whatever reason, at quarterback, it almost never goes according to plan. So I'm not trying to depress you guys on this nice Wednesday, this Whiskey Wednesday, okay?
Yeah, that's right. But thanks, JD.
There's just, like, you need a lot of luck.
Yeah.
And as Waddle will tell you, he's got 20 examples of what the Titans did not working out versus the one time it did work out for them. So yeah. That's all I'm saying.
It's hard, man, especially when there's uncertainty at that position in this league. JD,
by the way, I'm sorry about the round table last week.
No, you were sick as a dog.
Well, I was very sick. However, I felt better a little bit that morning, and I texted Merkin. And I said, hey, can I get back in? He said Potash had already volunteered. And look, Mark Potash is a national treasure.
Yes, he is.
I don't know if people know Potsy that well. He's a hell of a bowler. He's a Bears historian. And he's a national treasure. So when I heard that Potsy was filling in for me, I said, these guys are in good hands.
Yeah, you knew we were in good hands. It was fun. We missed you, though. We'll talk to you soon, JD. Thanks, buddy.
All right, guys. Take care.
See ya. That's Jeff Dickerson at Dickerson ESPN on Twitter. More on the conference championship games this weekend with our buddy Field Yates. We'll preview those two big games coming up next on ESPN 1000.
Field Yates on Carmen and Yurko.
Sometimes people do things in fantasy football emotionally and interest-wise, right?
NFL and fantasy football talk with Field Yates every week on Carmen and Yurko.
What if there's a 5% chance that he does play at a high level, a top 12 quarterback level? This is your one chance to take advantage of it.
ESPN's Field Yates on ESPN 1000.
Lots to talk about, a major retirement in the NFL, Championship Sunday, and a lot of people say a premature retirement. I mean, 8 years is still like more than twice as long as the average NFL career. 8 years is still, it's a lot of games in this league, especially in a position like middle linebacker, Yurk, where you're a high-impact, high-collision position.
It's 8 years at the middle linebacker position at a time when you were getting paid and he was a good player.
Yeah, he made a lot of money, like a little easier to walk away probably, right?
You made $64 million lifetime. It's easy to walk away say, hey, and his family probably wanted him to walk away a year before this.
That's what it sounds
maybe
like.
Maybe 2 years before this when this stuff first started.
Yeah.
So is it easier? Yeah, but it's not easy to retire.
You could tell by his speech. I mean, he got emotional a couple times. Yeah. I get it.
Nobody wants to stop playing.
I know.
Everybody wants to continue to play. Everybody wants to play as long as they possibly can. But if you're going to take care of yourself, and it kind of goes on what Marshawn Lynch said, hey, take care of your bodies,
take care of
your yourselves, take care of your money.
Got to. What did he say? Got to get that chicken.
Yeah,
we should play that. By the way, that was like just the best, like pure from the heart, emotional, like advice. We can play that maybe after
and
we
he's
talk
right.
the field.
I'm 52. You know, the quality of life. If I don't stay on top of it, will go down. I've got to stay on top of it. I got to physically stay fit.
Luke Kuechly was Brian Urlacher good, wasn't he? Luke Kuechly's going to the Hall of Fame.
He's going to the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
He was an exceptional linebacker.
Exceptional.
In the limited amount of time that he played, he was an exceptional linebacker.
Let's bring in our buddy Field Yates. He's at Field Yates on Twitter. He joins Carmen and Yurko now on ESPN 1000. HOF someday for Luke Kuechly?
I think so, guys. And you just laid out a lot of the reasons why. And sometimes when we evaluate a player's credentials for the Hall of Fame, we rely on the stats because he's got the stats to back it up. And I think that Luke Kuechly, you can rely on the stats or you can rely on just those that saw him play or those that played against him. And basically from the minute he stepped onto the field, he was a Pro Bowl or All-Pro level linebacker and an incredible leader for the Carolina Panthers, a do-everything linebacker, a guy that over the past decade, along with Bobby Wagner, has been the measuring stick for linebackers. It's a sad ending only because there's so much good football left in Luke Kuechly's tank, but I think it's the realization that I think more and more players are aware of their football mortality and the fact that even if they have more to give, this is not about 28-year-old Luke Kuechly. This is about 38 and 48 and 58-year-old Luke Kuechly and how that person wants to live his life as a father and grandfather and all the things that Luke Kuechly has not to this point yet had the chance to experience.
Right, and I think Yurko makes a good point that it is easier now more than ever for guys to realize that they've got great financial stability for their family for generations to come. And, you know, if you're a guy like Andrew Luck, if you're a guy like Luke Kuechly, like, we might see more and more of this going forward because the reality is they've tried to make the game safer. It's still very violent. It's very dangerous. That'll never go away. It's inherent to the game of football. And when guys have the financial ability to be to pass this great wealth on to their families for generations, it does make it an easier decision, doesn't it?
Yeah, it certainly does. I think I heard $64 or $68 million already in the bank. That helps. And Luke Kuechly is the kind of guy that's going to have opportunities beyond the football field, whether that's broadcasting or maybe even something that has nothing to do with football whatsoever. I'm closely tied to the Boston College football program, and anybody that knows Luke Kuechly will tell you that, you know, we call a lot of the players that we see on Saturdays student athletes, but a lot of them are there not to play school, right? I mean, the infamous phrase that Cardale Jones, I believe it was, first used. But Luke Kuechly was the definition of a student athlete during his time at Boston College. So he's walking away from a lot of money, but it wouldn't surprise me if Luke Kuechly can live responsibly off what he's already made and then might have a whole other chapter in his life, whether that's an ambassador for the game of football, coaching, broadcasting, et cetera, or maybe something that has nothing to do with football whatsoever. I'm sure he'll be able to fulfill himself going forward, despite the fact he's only 28 years old. He's already retired.
Yeah. Field Yates is our guest. It's Carmen and Yurko on ESPN 1000. Let's react a little bit to last week, and then I want to preview the championship games. I mean, we saw an all-timer, obviously, Sunday in the first game. Saw a very close competitive game in Green Bay. The Titans, onward and upward. The 49ers throttle the Vikings. What was to you the thing that stood out most? Was it just the crazy comeback in Kansas City, or was it what the Titans did on the road in Baltimore?
I think it's what the Titans did to the Ravens. And I've been on NFL Live and had this conversation with some colleagues and disagreed. I'd be curious where you guys stand on it. But the Titans absolutely smothered the Ravens. And I don't care how good Tennessee is. Baltimore choked on Sunday, guys. Or on Saturday night, excuse me. Baltimore was talking like a team that was expecting to be in Miami, Florida, playing for a Super Bowl and being the prohibitive favorites in that game in 2.5 weeks from when we're talking right now. The Ravens, and they can push back and say they weren't looking past anybody, but that was the sense that I got, was this was a team that was already gearing up for a trip to Miami. And the Titans went to Baltimore and said, okay, well, that might have to wait a year because we've got something to say about it. And the numbers in the box score look great for Lamar Jackson.
Right.
But I mean, you guys tell me, was that as good of an offensive performance as all the other ones that we saw throughout the season from Lamar? It just wasn't.
No,
I thought it was an incredible clinic.
I thought Tennessee,
incredible clinic with Tennessee.
Tennessee punched him in the mouth twice is what I thought happened, Baltimore. And they were in a daze the rest of the game. They couldn't get out of whatever funk or daze they were in, and they never recovered from their drop passes.
Yeah,
they never recovered for their gambles that they took and were snuffed out on.
Yeah,
Tennessee out-executed Baltimore, and I think they could never get solid footing the rest of the way, and that caused them to kind of not become desperate, but realize that it was time was running out. They were losing, and more and more, it was just all of a sudden the realization that they're going to lose that game came in the fourth quarter, and it's like it was too late to do anything about it.
And Baltimore failed at what it does best. You know, I mean, nobody went for it more than Baltimore in fourth down, right? Nobody converted at a higher percentage during the regular season than Baltimore. They had fourth and one twice. They couldn't convert. Oh, and when the Titans got the ball back after the change of possession, they scored touchdowns on the subsequent drive after those stops on fourth and one. Like, so to Field's point, I mean, I think you're right. Yeah, the number, they had 500 yards of offense, but a lot of that came when the game was out of reach and Tennessee just kind of, and Derrick Henry just kind of punched him in the mouth and they didn't have much of an answer for it. No team that had ever done historically in terms of numbers what the Baltimore Ravens did in the regular season ever went out this early in the playoffs. So you kind of have to look at it as a choke job.
It really was. And with the Ravens this year, so much of the – and so you mentioned how they were the most aggressive team on going for it on fourth down this year. And a lot of praise was heaped on them, and not unfairly, but about the analytical approach they took to football and how it was so smart of them. And I think that we get so caught up in the whether a team should go for it or not and what the numbers tell you that sometimes we have to look at the fact that it can be a results-driven evaluation, right? So they made the right choice, but ultimately the Titans stuffed them. So it was all for naught. And I don't know that there's really a game plan. I don't know that there is a vice grip you can put on Lamar Jackson every single week, but the Titans clearly had a vision. And if they can concoct a vision of how to slow down Patrick Mahomes this week, guys, then wow, that would be as good of a back-to-back week stretch as I think you could possibly imagine. And, you know, it's going to take everything they have. The Chiefs, and I wish I could think of who was the first person to mention this, but last Sunday reminded me of when you're playing against the Warriors during their five-year run, right? Yeah. I mean, it's like you can hold them down, but they're eventually going to find a way to get back into it. So until the clock is over or unless Patrick Mahomes retires, they're going to be in every single game.
I don't think offensively you saw the best out of either one of the two NFC teams that are going to be in the NFC Championship game. I think San Francisco has more. I think Green Bay has more. The first game was a lopsided victory for the San Francisco 49ers. Do the Packers end up giving a better performance this time?
Yeah, I think they have to. I think there's no way they won't. And both teams enter the game with relatively good health, which is an important sign. It wasn't the case the last time these two teams played. Devontae Adams being banged up, obviously a huge part of what Green Bay dealt with during the regular season. But for the most part, these two teams are in very good shape. That matters. I think the atmosphere certainly favors San Francisco, simply playing at home on what I think could be the largest crowd at Levi's Stadium history. But San Francisco is one of those teams, guys, that, like, if they get off the track, if like the train leaves the station, you better watch out. I know the game was competitive for like a quarter and a half this past week against Minnesota, but it just felt inevitable that San Francisco was going to just skyrocket away. And the defensive line is so, so fast. I mean, they get up the field in a hurry. They've got depth. And then offensively, they keep finding guys to contribute. It feels like every week there's a new player that's making a play for San Francisco. They go four deep at running back. They've got a great offensive line. And, you know, Kyle Shanahan schemes players open. It feels like guys who maybe if they were asked to do different things in a different offense would look like just guys are making huge plays for San Francisco. So I think they are they should be decided favorites going into this game on Sunday.
When you get into these games, Field, where the coaching ties on opposite sidelines run so deep, is there an advantage one way or another? Is it a wash? Like, does the more senior guy have some sort of an advantage? Because obviously Shanahan and LaFleur know each other very well.
Yeah, I think it's probably a wash, and especially having played each other once earlier on this season. I think the thing that I'm always on high alert for during the playoffs in general, and we've seen some of this up to this point, but definitely in conference championship weekend, is this is the time to empty the bag, right? I mean, so yeah. don't be surprised if, you know, it's Aaron Jones throwing a touchdown pass before Aaron Rodgers on Sunday, or maybe Emmanuel Sanders. You know, that's what you always see during these championship games. And we saw it last weekend to a bit as well. Obviously, we saw Derrick Henry throw a touchdown pass, and it's at this point of the year, you've got plays that you work on, you know, every week. Yerk will probably tell you Friday afternoon, an offense is going through its walkthrough, and it's got the one or two or three plays that someone drew up in the dirt at one point. And we might see them this Sunday because it's not that it hasn't been win or go home, but it's win or go home. And, you know, even if you win, you've only got one more game you're saving up your goods for. So wouldn't be surprised if this is one of those games where the coach is a bit more opportunistic, ends up being, you know, that's where the edge derives from a coaching staff. That will be my interpretation of how these two sides match up.
All right, the Super Bowl will be?
I think it's the Chiefs and the 49ers, and, you know, that's a boring pick in the sense that both teams are playing at home and both teams are a favorite. But if the Titans, and this is definitely prisoner of the moment reaction on my part, but I'll just say it. I think if the Titans win on Sunday, it'd be the most impressive three-game march of the Super Bowl of my lifetime. That's 32 years.
Yeah.
It would be back-to-back-to-back wins on the road over NFL MVPs, because we all know that Lamar Jackson is going to win the MVP this year. Brady in 2017, Mahomes in 2018, Lamar Jackson in 2019. Ryan Tannehill has thrown for, like, whatever it is, 175 yards total or 200 yards total. Incredible. And, you know, the Titans are a team that they were 2-4 at one point this year. But it's fitting that these two teams are meeting because the focal point of their season, in my estimation, was Week 10. Titans blocked that kick to win 35-32 over the Chiefs. That was their first win at the time over a team with a winning record. The Chiefs at that have not lost since that time. So both of those two teams really, I would say, can turn back to Week 10 when they met the first time around. And so, you know something? That meant a lot to each of our seasons, just in different ways. So can't wait to see them. It's supposed to be bitterly cold on Sunday. And not that I'm tough anyways, but I'm definitely not tough enough to withstand like 2-degree temperatures in Arrowhead on Sunday afternoon.
No way. All right, enjoy the weekend. We'll talk to you next week, Field.
All right, guys, looking forward to it.
Thanks, buddy. See you. Is it really going to be that cold in Arrowhead on Sunday?
That's what it looks like. We got a cold.
We got a cold front coming in?
It'll be 22 degrees tomorrow here.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be cool for like a winter, three days. Yeah, and I think on Sunday it warms up a little bit.
The high in Kansas City Sunday is 22. Boy, that's the high.
Game kicks off at 2:40, so by the end of it, you know, the sun's down.
It's going to be cold.
The high here is only 16 on Sunday.
Yeah, it's going to be
chilly.
Feel
like winter, boys.
Well, I mean, January, we've been waiting for it.
I know.
Hopefully, Punxsutawney Phil sees his shadow here on the February 2nd.
That's Super Bowl Sunday this year.
I believe it is. Early in the morning, we'll find out what Punxsutawney does.
That's the greatest, isn't it?
Yeah. Bill Murray in that movie, Groundhog Day, is phenomenal.
Oh, my God. I love it.
Let's get that little rat out of that hole.
I absolutely love it. Yeah, Phil brings up a good point, too. I mean, can you think of a more impressive run to get to a Super Bowl? I mean, like, I was thinking maybe the 07 Giants, but how great was that Tampa team they beat in the wild card round? You know, then they beat Dallas, and then they went, the great win was winning on the road in Green Bay. That was Favre's, I think, was that Favre's last game, Yurk, in 07 in Green Bay?
It could have been.
And they beat Favre and the Packers to go to the Super Bowl, and then they beat the undefeated Patriots. Like, that was an incredible run. They won all three games on the road to get there. Then they win the Super Bowl at the neutral site. That comes to mind, but
that was in Arizona.
Was that one in Arizona?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like, this would be remarkable if, with Ryan Tannehill, they go on the road in the playoffs and beat Tom Brady, Lamar Jackson, and Patrick Mahomes. That'd be stunning.
I forget what Green Bay's was in 2010.
Yeah, Green Bay's
remember
was probably
Green Bay,
pretty
good. Well, they won the seed. I know they won here.
Yeah.
And I forget the two teams they beat before that, and then they end up winning the Super Bowl. That's four great games.
Yeah. I'd have to go back and look. I can't remember either who they beat in those first two games, Jericho. But 312-332-3776. That'll be a good topic on Monday if the Titans do win. Can you ever remember a more impressive run to a Super Bowl? We're going to find out. It's Carmen and Jericho on ESPN 1000.
The soon-to-be Hall of Famer, Michael Wilbon, joins us for Can't Miss Radio at 5 o'clock. The changes continue for our Bears, and will changes happen with our Bulls?
All of that and more. We start at 2, Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000.
We're breaking down Groundhog Day with Waddle. Danny said, don't ruin it, which was funny. Danny saw something, and we were just mentioning Groundhog Day, which is Super Bowl Sunday a couple weeks ago, and Danny found something on the internet that said, They try to like extrapolate out how long he's been there. How many days, how many years does he relive the same day based on all the skills he's acquired by the end of the movie? You can't play piano like that.
Yeah, suddenly.
And somebody said that it equates to roughly 33 years that he was reliving. Can you imagine the same nightmare over and over and over again? Of course, he finally gets himself out of the nightmare.
Well, and he finally ends up, you know, making good things happen.
Yes, he does. My favorite part of the movie is when he quotes the French poetry. It's the best scene in the movie, right? When he calls it stupid the night before, and then the very next night, or at some subsequent point, it probably took him a while to learn French, he starts quoting the French poetry to her, and she melts, and, oh, you speak French. Oui. I mean, nobody could have pulled that off like Bill Murray, right?
Oui.
You want to talk about national treasures?
As much as I don't like him, it's such a good movie.
Oh, my God. It's all of his movies. Start coming up with the top five Bill Murray movies. It's hard to do.
Because he's made that many great movies.
If you haven't seen St. Vincent, I'm telling you,
I loved it.
Something special.
I don't know if I could put it in his top five because it's such an impressive list, but I loved St. Vincent.
How about Mad Dog and Glory?
I love Mad Dog and Glory. It wouldn't be in my top five either. But
you'd have Caddyshack for sure, for Ghostbusters for sure, Groundhog's Day for sure.
For sure.
So you have three of the five.
What's he saying?
What's going on?
Waddle's making fun of Danny for calling it Groundhog's Day.
Or Groundhog Day.
Animal House? No, he's not an Animal House. No, he's not. But I was checking you.
Scrooged is great.
Rushmore.
Rushmore's fabulous.
I didn't like Rushmore.
Oh, my God. Come on.
How about Space Jam?
No, I wouldn't put Space Jam.
Kingpin.
Kingpin. Thank you. Big Earn McCracken. Of course that's in the top five.
What about Bob?
We forgot about Meatballs.
I said Meatballs. Oh. I did.
Meatballs.
I'm getting yelled at by Waddle.
Stripes. I mean, you can't even. It's impossible. That's how good he's been. And I do agree with Yurko. St. Vincent was touching and different and very, very well done. And Melissa McCarthy's great in that movie,
Did you mention
too.
Stripes, too?
I did, yeah. Stripes and Meatballs. Yes, okay, absolutely. Thank you. Hey, Wingfest is back, Yurko, at Bub City downtown. You know that. In River North and in Rosemont. And you can catch all the playoff action on 24 flat-screen TVs with $15 pitchers of Bud Light Modelo, 10 different wing flavors to choose from, plus slabs of baby back ribs are buy two, get one free. And if you're tailgating or hosting for these playoff games or the big game coming up, Bub City's offering free delivery through DoorDash on Saturdays and Sundays for large party orders. So go to bub-city.com to learn more. And it's Wednesday, so it's Whiskey Wednesday. I'll have a review on my Twitter timeline later tonight, so make sure you follow me at Carmen DeFalco. Picked out a good one for tonight. But the whiskey of the week at Bub City, Yurt, and we're going over there next week, by the way. I can't wait.
Yes, we are.
One of my favorites that you hear me talk about all the time, Four Roses, and their very own single barrel, not just the single barrel that you normally see at your local liquor store on the shelf, whether you're at Binney's or Grand and Western Liquors or anywhere else you happen to shop, and you see their standard Four Roses release. This is one of Bub's special picks. And if you've heard me talk about Four Roses or if you're familiar with them, they have 10 different combinations when it comes to their mash bill, Yurko. They have the high rye, like the super high rye,
right,
and the sort of medium rye, and then they have five different proprietary yeast strains. So you get 10 different concoctions. And the ones that the one that the guys at Bub City picked out for this one is an OESK. So you get the lower rye mash bill and the slightly spicy yeast strain. That is the one that is on special this week. So get into Bub City. Tell them Carmen and Yurko sent you and say you want to try the special whiskey of the week, the Four Roses Single Barrel, which is an OESK that they have right now. And those are usually aged anywhere from, I'd say about 9 to 11 years. And they are all delicious. We're
Sounds
big fans of Four Roses.
Yes, yeah, we are.
Yes, indeed. Yurko.
Four Roses. Mm.
I've got win totals for MLB 2020. The Cubs, you pretty much nailed this the other day, kid.
I'm not surprised.
I mean, you nailed the White Sox. You said 84, right?
Yeah.
Vegas said it at 84.5.
Cubs at 86.
Cubs at 86, maybe a little bit higher than we thought.
I'll be honest, I said it at 84. Both of them. Will either one reach 84 this year?
I'm going to say one of the two will.
And I know passions are high on the South side.
Yes, well, excitement is high.
Yeah, passions.
I'll say one of the two do. How about the Oakland A's win total, 89.5? Can't you just appreciate what Oakland does?
I do.
I mean, isn't that something?
I watched Moneyball again.
Yeah, they did a good job of that movie.
Yeah, it was
I read that book. That book's probably, that was about 03 it came out?
And the guy that was there was Paul D. Podesta? Was that him that was there?
I believe the Jonah Hill character is kind of based on Paul D.
Right.
Podesta. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, who's now running amok in Cleveland trying to run a football team.
See, it may not transfer over. May be like, hey, I think this will work here.
But I think Moneyball came out, Michael Lewis's great book about 02 or 03, and I read the book and I liked it. They did such a great job with the movie. I had serious doubts when that movie was coming out. I'm like, making that into a movie? And Philip Seymour Hoffman's going to play Art Howe?
How's that going to happen?
But it was great. It got nominated for an award, for an Academy Award that year, and they really did a wonderful job with that. Some of the big win totals, I mean, look at the Yankees, 101. The Dodgers checking in at 99. I think the Yankees are the only team with over 100. What about the Angels at 85.5? Adding Rendon. Like, can't the Angels win 86 games? Seems like a good bet to me.
Their manager's Joe Madden.
Their manager's Joe Madden. They added. I think I'm going to bet that over.
You would get the Joe Madden effect in the first year.
I think so. Crosstalk is coming up next with Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000.